VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, we took a look at several executive actions taken by President Biden to make so-called global climate change a significant priority by reinstating the Paris Climate Accord and stopping this leasing for oil, gas, and coal on federal lands, the killing of thousands of jobs by stopping the Keystone XL, recommitting the U.S. to the World Health Organization, as well as other issues, but all issues to what the World Economic Forum calls the Great Reset and how we're propelling toward that. Today we're going to be taking a look at his role, President Biden's role as Commander-in-Chief, particularly in reinstituting a social experiment which began under the Obama administration to openly welcome those experiencing gender dysphoria to join our troops, and even taking this a step forward, backwards some would say, but we're going to be taking a look at these issues and their impact on our nation's military. Joining us today, Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness. They're an independent, nonpartisan public policy organization that specializes in military and social issues. Elaine, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to talk to you today, Jim.
Well, things really did get off to a rocky start with the new Biden administration. I mean, just one day we have the National Guard troops in the Capitol. Members of Congress are thanking them for their service. And when all the pomp and circumstance is over from Inauguration Day, we've got thousands of troops put into this cold concrete parking garage. What happened?
It was unbelievable. And I think it kind of shocked a lot of people around the nation to see our National Guard troops treated in this way. Then there was the insults, personal insults from a member of Congress, Steve Cohen, a Democrat from Tennessee. He insinuated during a CNN interview that most of the 25,000 National Guard soldiers who were there for the inauguration, that they were mostly white males and probably Trump voters, so they should be in the class of people, they might be in the class of people, who may want to do something cause trouble. That was a gross insult. I did not hear the president or the vice president say anything to counter it. And then we heard about 5,000 of those troops sent, as you said, to a cold garage, sort of outdoor, one bathroom, no electrical outlets or internet. That was bad enough. They're still very much in need of food and other supplies, and they're still in the Capitol. And the way the Capitol looks with the barbed wire and the high walls, it's just grossly inappropriate.
Why are they still there?
We don't know. The mission is very unclear. We haven't any idea what it is that they're there to guard against, unless, of course, you believe conspiracy theories that there's going to be some kind of an uprising comparable to, well, it was a horrendous thing that happened on January 6th, the assault on the Capitol. But there's no indication that that's about to happen again or would, or anybody's even instigating or thinking about anything like that. So it's just a misuse of the troops right now. And that's just for starters. That's just a temporary thing. The worst things that are happening under this president are being done by executive order.
Yeah.
There were two executive orders, one of them on the first day. One of them banned any kind of distinction based on sexual orientation or how a person identifies as to gender. That covered all branches of the government. Then there was a second one that was particularly addressed at the military, designed to reinstate the policies that were in place under President Barack Obama and Biden when he was vice president. Accompanying that was another executive order reinstating critical race theory instruction in all branches of the government, and that would include the Department of Defense. And when we get a chance to talk about it, it's worse in the military because you can't go home or choose who you live with, who you serve with, if you have a superior standing in front of you and telling you if you're not a minority, well, that means you're a white supremacist, and you must be racist. It's kind of a policy which, if you put it in the military, it's really demoralizing, divisive, And that makes it a national security issue.
Elaine,
you take all these things together and you have a direct assault on the integrity of our military. Certainly sound policy is being undermined, chipped away at, and it's just beginning.
We're going to circle back on this whole matter of transgenderism in the military. And in doing so, Elaine, I know you could probably talk an hour or two on how we got to this point, but I'd like you to summarize that, if we could, how we did get to this point on transgenderism. And, I mean, there was a time when homosexuality was not permitted in our military. Then it turned into, well, it's not permitted, but we instituted a policy known as don't ask, don't tell. So just help quickly walk us through, when did we see this change take place in our military that brought us to this point now where we're saying you can openly serve as a transgender and serve with pride?
Well, yes. That policy, the transgender policy, was instituted in the last 2 years of the Obama administration. And I should mention that back in 2010, when the law regarding gays in the military was repealed, by the way, it was not don't ask, don't tell. That was never a law. That was
right.
A policy.
Mm-hmm.
When that was repealed, one of the ways they got it repealed was to promise that it would never lead to transgenders in the military. That was one of several promises that were made to be broken. The law was repealed. And in 2015, the documents started coming from the Pentagon announcing that henceforth persons diagnosed with gender dysphoria or persons identifying as the opposite sex could remain in the military, a policy of recruiting people into the military with gender dysphoria, that was put on hold when Donald Trump came in. But during those 2 years, when we did have open transgenders in the military, there was a lot of data that was gathered to find out exactly how did it all work out? How did it affect readiness and morale and deployability and the like? And as we saw in 2010, most of the advocates keep denying, oh, there never was a problem. The Joint Chiefs said there was never a problem. Well, when you look at the data, you see a lot of problems. For instance, among those, it was less than 1,000, 954 to be exact, people in uniform who were diagnosed with gender dysphoria and sought treatment. Of those, these people, less than 1,000, required 30,000 mental health visits. The medical costs for those personnel increased almost 300%, three times. And in some commands, they had to divert operational and maintenance funds for the, specialized medical treatments, travel, and the like. There was also something called, you had time off if you wanted to try it out, to decide if you really wanted to make the transition or not. That could last anywhere from 3 to 12 months in addition to treatment, time off. It really was quite costly for those individuals. Again, a small number, but for those individuals, the cost increased quite a bit. But the worst statistic had to do with suicide, because personnel with gender dysphoria were found to be 8 times more likely to attempt suicide. And in many cases, they were successful in doing that. And it emphasizes something we need to say. Persons who are confused about gender identity, who suffer from gender dysphoria, people who call themselves transgender, these people deserve compassion and competent psychological care. It should not be politicized care. Gender dysphoria is a psychological condition. It's like schizophrenia or bulimia or eating disorders. There's a long list of psychological disorders that make you ineligible to serve in the military. But the way it was set up under Obama, there was only one way that you could be treated. If you went to a doctor or your superior and said, I'm confused, I'm not sure, maybe I shouldn't be the man that I am, maybe I should be a woman or vice versa. Well, you need competent care here. There shouldn't be only one diagnosis, but that's the way they set it up, that you would have to go to a doctor who embraces this theory that is not only untrue, it's debunked by science, the idea that you can change someone's biological sex by changing their outward appearance. The whole idea that you are assigned your gender at birth, the question comes immediately, assigned by who? We know what science says. Science says that DNA, human DNA, is in every cell of a person's body. And it's there even before birth. And that's what determines what your biological sex is. Not a change in your bureaucratic marker. It's something called your gender marker. Well, the administration under Obama said, well, we're going to make it possible for people to get their gender marker changed. That's a bureaucracy. And then if they present themselves as the opposite sex, everybody else has to respect that. So how does that work out in practice? Well, you've got issues of privacy, athletics, medical issues, and conscience. And where do you begin? Well, you start with women primarily. The issue of privacy is very real. Women in the military deserve our respect and thanks. They give up a lot when they serve. They have very little privacy as it is. But now, this administration, as under Obama, they're saying, well, if someone of a different biological sex wants to share your private facilities, just get used to it. Now, that phrase was actually used in one of the guidebooks under Barack Obama. Some of the guidebook was asked, well, what does the commander do if women are not comfortable with this arrangement? The answer was, tell them to get used to it.
You're referring to the Military Transgender Policy Implementation Handbook. I mean, folks, actually a handbook. On how to implement this.
Yes, it was, I forget how many pages, a pretty substantial book. And it had scenarios and vignettes. What do you do with a man who comes before you and says that he's pregnant? That's another one, another vignette or scenario. And the answer is you have to get used to it. Doctors and nurses, there's no conscience clause that they can rely upon. So if they are called upon to do briefings and medical treatments, including hormone treatments, surgeries, those last two kinds of treatments are irreversible in many cases, there's no conscience clause. They are required to provide that type of so-called medical care, but it's medical care only in one direction. So families who are very concerned about someone, a loved one in the military, who's only getting one-sided medical care and may do something irreversible, I've heard from families, or did hear from families during that era, they were terrified about what might happen. I think we're going to see some of that again very soon. The Department of Defense is going to come out with regulations in 60 days, and they'll spell out more what this means, but I'm sure they will just follow the blueprint that was set under President Barack Obama and Secretary of Defense at that time. His name was Ashton Carter.
So, yeah, and not only use that as a skeleton, but I'm confident that they're going to be expanding this because, as President Biden had tweeted out, that this needs to also be done to serve with pride. I mean, that is something that is not just, is really, when they talk about going forth with pride, it really is putting yourself above others. Look at me. Look what I've accomplished here. That's not what the military is about.
No, it isn't, and the time off to find out if you really want to transition, that's called a real life experience. There's a whole set of complicated things. Do you wear your uniform when you're leaving your base? Can you cross-dress when you go out in the evening or if you're off duty? What happens when you come back to the base?
Tell you what,
all of these things are complicated.
Yeah, we're going to pick up with these issues after the break. Elaine Donnelly is with us today from the Center for Military Readiness. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what can you tell me about Neanderthal man?
Chris, from a biblical perspective, Neanderthal man was a human just like me or you. They evidently were an ethnic group that migrated away from Babel, living in very harsh conditions, but were human nonetheless. Archaeological discoveries have shown that they used agriculture, they buried their dead, they had art, musical instruments, they were humans just like me and you. Those who assigned them to subhuman categories suggested that they didn't have the right kind of hands to use tools. But a recent study has shown that they had thumb and forefingers just like ours with just as much dexterity. In every sense, they were as human as you and me, descendants of Noah, souls for whom Christ died. going back to Genesis makes all the data fit so well.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today is Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness. And matter of fact, their website, you can read a recent article on there. Here's a headline, Biden presidency begins with injuries and insults to the troops. The website is CMR, that stands for Center for Military Readiness, CMRlink.org, CMRlink.org. I'd like to take us back to the Oval Office last week Monday when President Biden signed this executive order pertaining to the acceptance of transgenderism. Here's what he had to say.
Well, folks, thank you very much for being here. I'm about to sign an executive order, but I want to begin by thanking the Vice President for helping this, but also thank Chairman Milley, who has been a great help, and also the soon-to-be Secretary of Defense, who, when we get finished this, will be sworn in a moment. And so don't say anything that caused him to change his mind, okay? But all kidding aside, this is reinstating a position that previous commanders and as well as the secretaries have supported. And what I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform and essentially restoring the situation that existed before where transgender personnel, if qualified in every other way, can serve their government in the United States military.
Elaine, I'm going to have you comment on a couple of things. First of all, he said, if qualified in every other way. Mm-hmm. I mean, are we making an exception then for this?
Well, what's interesting, if you look at the executive order, you don't find the mention of what the Trump policy was all about. It did not ban transgenders as a class. It was all about gender dysphoria, the psychological condition that causes stress. If a person believes they are really of the opposite biological sex, they believe that in their mind, even though they're not, and they can't be, and they can't change to that opposite sex. Gender dysphoria is what the issue was about. So under Donald Trump, transgenders who did not have gender dysphoria, and there are such people, for a certain period of time, 36 months, I believe, 3 years, they were allowed to serve if they served in their biological sex. However, those with gender dysphoria or diagnosed with gender dysphoria were not eligible to serve. And there was a grandfather clause for those who came out during the Biden years. So the President Biden doesn't seem to know what he's even talking about. And the executive order that he signed on January 20, again, there was two separate ones. The one on the 20th said this, children should be able to learn without worrying about whether they will be denied access to the restroom, the locker room, or school sports. Now, that makes it very clear what it is he is banning. He's saying that regardless of biological sex, you should be able to enter, and I'm quoting, the restroom, the locker room, or school sports. That's the new policy. So, again, how does this affect women? Well, it's pretty obvious if you talk about expectations of privacy. But you also get into the field of athletics. And we have a lot of sports teams in the military, starting with the military service academies, Army, Navy, Air Force, these teams. They're very effective teams. If all of a sudden they have to pretend that gender doesn't matter, that biological sex doesn't matter, the female teams would have to be open to male players. What does that do to female athletics at the service academies and all the colleges, even down to the elementary schools, okay, for dependents? Because the Department of Defense runs the largest school system in the world. And all of those schools and all of the personnel and teachers and everybody involved will be subject to this overall policy banning any discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. That's pretty far-reaching. And by the way, when the president says the military people supported...
Yeah, he said, and here he said previous commanders and secretaries have supported. I could have said previous commanders and secretaries didn't support it.
No, they did not. But it was very interesting that I believe it was in July 2017, former Secretary of Defense James Mattis testified before the Senate. And when asked about this, he said, he himself personally discovered that the military people were not allowed to even get information about any problems that were occurring with the transgender policy. So he said, what you're asking me about, they could not comment on because they were denied information about what really happened. I'm paraphrasing what Secretary Mattis said at the time. Now, that's a pretty, he said that this should be big news. He actually said that on the record. This is big news. He was not aware of that. But that's the way it was, and that's the way it's going to be in the future. And anyone who expects, well, there might be some loopholes or conscience clauses that people may not have to carry this out. Well, the Department of Justice did something very interesting just the week before the, couple of days before the inauguration. Under Donald Trump, the Department of Justice issued a memorandum said that the Bostock Supreme Court decision, that's the one that said no discrimination based on sexual orientation, in employment, okay, and transgenders in employment, it did not affect things like education, immigration, the military, other institutions. So they issued a memo to this effect. This is Department of Justice. Well, guess what? As soon as President Biden took the oath, the Department of Justice, under his administration, just pounced on that memo. They not only eliminated it, they scrubbed it from the web page, and they even scrubbed it from the archives.
My.
Now, that shows you how, when this administration says they're going to get rid of everything that President Trump stood for, they really mean what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Orwellian, and it's scary. If you think about how far are they going to go with this, you cannot erase history. But that's another thing, military history that is being eliminated from many of our institutions. Critical race theory
also
about history.
Yes, we're going to get to CRT in a bit here. We have a director from the Secretary of Defense that says allowing for individuals to serve in their self-identified gender. So that's, I mean, it's not just, you know, mask this. No, you serve in your self-identified gender.
Biological sex.
Yep. Thank you. And then President Biden tweeted last Monday. He said, today I repealed the discriminatory ban on transgender people serving in the military. It's simple. America is safer when everyone qualified to serve can do so openly and with pride. Your response.
What? Define qualified. If you have a psychological disorder that affects deployability, morale, that requires the entire institution to embrace something that is not true, is that really what we mean by qualification? Under the previous administration, and very likely under Biden, what he's really talking about is a special set of rights for this disorder. Okay, you don't have rights for people who suffer from schizophrenia. Or eating disorders, or physical disorders either, heart conditions, diabetes. All of those conditions affect your eligibility to serve. But it's only this one, this group, this small group, but politically very powerful, that is getting special treatment from this administration. And it will have it'll have a lot of consequences affecting much more of the institution, many more people than we may realize. Because everybody has to buy into the fiction that you can change biological sex just by changing appearance.
You cannot. And 954, you mentioned, with gender dysphoria that had been part of the survey, 30,000 mental health visits. Who funds the psychological testing, the counseling, and I understand even body-altering surgeries?
Yes, the number was 990 active-duty service members diagnosed with gender dysphoria. These are the ones who sought treatment. Of course, the Department of Defense provides funding for the medical treatment. And hormone treatments can go on indefinitely once they're begun. You have to maintain those hormones, and they're not inexpensive. And they do have psychological consequences. They are, in many cases, irreversible. You should know that the push is on to extend surgeries, which don't occur as often as some people believe, but they do occur. And they're very expensive. Surgery should be offered even to dependent children.
Oh, my.
this demand was made almost immediately when the change was made in the policy under Barack Obama. The New York Times had a big feature article about a child that was being denied transgender surgery, and all very sympathetically written, lovely young child. Is this where we really want to go? Well, there are serious consequences here. And it's not just the money, it's the soul of the institution. What is the military for?
One last question before we get to CRT, and that is, we understand that this is impacting military chaplains. I saw an article on WND.com, a Texas Army chaplain under investigation. He suggested on Facebook that transgender soldiers are mentally unfit, unqualified to serve. How are chaplains being impacted by this transgender policy?
Well, I can't comment on that particular case, but we do know that ever since 2010, there have been many cases of chaplains and people of faith who have been punished in their careers, either getting low marks on evaluations or as demoted or even discharged from the military. Some have had to file litigation because they have expressed views that are based on religious conviction that are contrary to existing policy. We also know that doctors and nurses have ethical standards. Many people in that community, doctors and nurses, believe that operations on healthy tissue are unethical, that you don't do that. And if they should resist and refuse, then they, too, put their careers at risk. I've heard from many people involved in this in the previous, or in the Biden administration, Obama-Biden, and I think we're going to hear more of this in the future. Because, again, the administration's made it very clear. They are going to enforce this regardless of the impact on readiness or morale or any other factor. It's a politically driven demand. There is nothing good for the military here.
Elaine Donnelly, our guest here today in Crosstalk, president of the Center for Military Readiness. Again, their website, cmrlink.org. You need to read our article on this, cmrlink.org. You'll find it there at the top of the page. Let's get to critical race theory. You indicated under President Biden's order, military schools at all levels have to introduce critical race theory instruction. Tell us about it.
Well, I investigated the, I started with the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and found that there was a course there for sociology majors that featured critical race theory. And when I inquired of the leadership there, well, do you have articles also and instruction on people like Walter Williams or Shelby Steele or people who have problems with this ideology? And they never answered my question, which I put to them repeatedly. But you can tell by the titles on the syllabus that this is a critical race theory course. Now, shortly after that, after this became public, the Trump administration eliminated all the CRT instructions in not just the service academies, but institutions across the board. Now, here comes Biden reversing that executive order. So it's logical that we're going to see more of it, not just in the service academies, but in every kind of military instruction. Now, again, put it in personal terms. If your own commander, and you're in the military, you don't get to go home anytime you want to. You don't get to choose who you live with or serve with. Here's your commander saying that people who are not minority are white supremacists.
Okay, I tell you what, we're going to stop right there because you've got a lot to say, and I don't want the break to interrupt you here with that. So we're going to bring back that scenario right after the break. Elaine Donnelly is with us. CMRlink.org is a website. And, the influx of critical race theory into our military. Folks, we'll be back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
From Ray Comfort and Living Waters comes the dramatic film Audacity, tackling a very divisive issue today, homosexuality. Challenged by a co-worker to defend his convictions about homosexuality and same-sex marriage, Peter has to consider if he has the courage to stand for what he believes, even at the risk of losing a friendship. How will he respond when faced with a harrowing life or death experience? Audacity uses a unique approach to address a very contemporary issue and challenges the viewer to reach out and approach the greatest spiritual need everyone faces. Audacity is a 55-minute powerful dramatic film that will impact your life. Get your copy of Audacity for a donation of $5, or 5 copies for a donation of $18, 10 copies for $25 when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
The program you're listening to is Crosstalk. It comes your way each weekday here on the VCY American Network. Elaine Donnelly is our guest here today, talking about, military readiness, taking a hit by the new administration, and not only the executive order for people with gender dysphoria, whom the president identifies as being transgender, to come in and serve with pride, but also the order here for the, well, what's going on in our military schools under critical race theory, CRT. And Elaine, you were just beginning to explain how this fleshes out, because people are made to feel like they are racist just by virtue of the color of their skin.
Yes, and that is the whole point. It does judge people by the color of their skin. This means it's a racist program, for heaven's sakes. And it says that if you are not actively anti-racist, then that means you're racist. Now, how does that work out in practice? It means that, if you are not minority, you're white supremacist, and if you deny that you are racist, you say, I'm not racist, that proves that you're racist, because you're so racist, you don't even know how racist you are.
Hmm.
Now, this is not funny, folks. I mean, I had not heard of this concept prior to last year when I became aware of it at West Point. It used to be an academic exercise. Most people weren't aware of it. Then came the 1619 Project, put forward by the New York Times, which is a prime force for CRT in our schools. But doing it in the civilian world is one thing. But if you do it in the military, you are really dividing troops and causing suspicion, in some cases, hatred that was not there, creating it. It's inexcusable. So we have to look at the definition of unit cohesion here. Properly understood, unit cohesion is not about going out for beers and liking each other. It's not social. It means dependence on others for mutual survival in combat. All right, now if you're told, and the guy across the room there, who happens to be a minority person, and he's told to look at you and suspect you of racism, and there's nothing you can say to clear that up or to deny it or reassure that person, no, that's not me, and then you go off to combat together, I mean, how divisive is that? It's corrosive. It's toxic, and more so in the military than in the civilian world, because people have to go out and put their lives on the line together.
Yeah.
On a routine basis. That's part of their job. They have to be prepared for that. You have to have mutual trust. Now, when the Joint Chiefs went to testify before the Senate a couple years ago, they were asked, well, during those Obama years, were there problems, or did people get along? Were there any issues of disciplines? Words to that effect. And they said, no, there were not. Now, that's a tribute to the discipline of our troops. They did not use the word cohesion. That was put in their mouth by the senator asking the question. That would be Senator Gillibrand of New York. And the headline that she wanted, and the same thing happened on the House side, was Joint Chiefs say no problems with unit cohesion. Well, that's not quite what they said. What they said was they didn't have complaints of disciplinary issues. And that's a whole different thing. And remember what Secretary Mattis said. The reason they didn't hear any complaints, ma'am, as he addressed her, is because there were no complaints that were allowed to go up the chain of command.
Hmm.
That's the way the policy worked. So what you have here is an exercise in perception management. You say something that's not true, and you get people to believe it. That's called PM. We're seeing it. Some people call it gaslighting. When you get great masses of people to buy into something that's not true, it is really, it's a toxic thing, it's demoralizing. In the military, it can be dangerous because it's the only military we have, and we depend on those troops. So they need high morale and trust among each other. They certainly don't need critical race theory.
Elaine Donnelly, our guest here today. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. I don't want to delve deep into this, Elaine, but because we dealt a lot of issues like this yesterday with so-called man-made global climate change, but we understand now that under Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, we now have a Pentagon treating climate change as a national security threat, and also understand that we are now going to be including security implications of climate change as part of risk analyses, strategy development. And I wondered after I read that, I said, what are they saying? Sorry, we can't fly this mission today against terrorists because it would require us putting too much CO2 in the air?
It could very well. Yes, it could. This is a revival of some very, very goofy policies that were put in place under a previous Secretary of the Navy by the name of Ray Mabus. Ray Mabus was the longest-serving Secretary of the Navy and undoubtedly the worst. Now, I will go back to my Ray Mabus file. There's all kinds of examples where he caused the Department of the Navy to expend millions of dollars for so-called green energy, designing ships and equipment in a way to go the green road, not to reduce the carbon footprint or whatever. How this will play out, who knows? It'll be extremely expensive. But this administration, in their view, it doesn't matter. They will pay any price and force the military to carry any burden to impose what they call equity. It's not equal treatment. It's called equity. Now, I was disappointed when the new Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, General Austin, did not stand up for the troops when they were being insulted. But he also should stand up for sound policies, non-discrimination, and recognition of individual merit, not group rights, not gender diversity metrics or any kind of diversity metrics. He did not do that. Instead, he seems to be an enthusiastic supporter of these woke programs, including critical race theory, and that's unfortunate. We've seen a study just in the last week about extremism in the military, and this is very disturbing. We know that there are individuals with military training who are extremists, but they are on both the right and the left. I saw a story just the other day, another story about a man who was a jihadist, and he withheld that information, and he threatened his colleagues. We've heard of military people killing their colleagues because of jihadism. You remember the man who down at Fort Hood,
yeah,
killed all sorts of people, and it turned out, and it was known that he was a jihadist devotee. They knew it, and they sent him down to Fort Hood anyway. He got a gun. He killed, I forget how many, I think it was 14 and an unborn child. That is extremism. Extremism on the right also needs to be dealt with, whatever it is, whatever form it takes. That's going to be a big job. But we should not make the mistake of assuming that if people have concerns about biology not being ignored, who have concerns about privacy, ethical concerns about medical considerations of gender dysphoria, religious convictions, people of faith, all of these people who volunteer to serve should not be treated like guinea pigs in a social experiment.
Yeah.
And treated harshly in their careers if they disagree with all this.
Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. And friends, your thoughts today on this, the welcoming and celebrating and encouraging people to, with gender dysphoria to come serve the nation with pride. Our guest here today, Elaine Donnelly. We're talking about critical race theory as well, entering the military. Our number, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Judith in Vermont. You're on the air, Judith.
Hi, thanks so much. Hi, Elaine. I thought that I had the best credentials in the world for being not a racist. I was in a wonderful Christian dance company. I was one of only two white people in the company, and I've had lots of black friends over the years. But I never realized that I was being racist in that if somebody would crack a racist joke, I wouldn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And if, I mean, I never, I never thought I had any power to change the way things were. I didn't like the way things were, but I never did anything to change it. And so now I just, you're going to laugh, but I just joined a group called Racist Anonymous. And we're trying to learn to be anti-racist. And I'm not a racist all the time. I'm a racist when I don't do the right thing when racism comes up. Sometimes I'm an anti-racist. Sometimes I'm a racist. I'm not one or the other permanently. But I'm very excited that this country has sort of woken up and that we can do something about the fact that all my black friends have never inherited money from their parents because they were always in debt.
Tell you, we're going to have Elaine respond to this here.
I think your intentions certainly are laudable. And people who make racist jokes in the presence of others, that's just plain rude behavior. Mm. And yes, something should be said. You can say it even without saying a word. People know if they've bombed with a joke that's highly inappropriate. I have no problem with that. That's certainly what I would do. But be very careful about being anti-racist. That means if there are disparities in percentages of any institution, say there's a sports team, and it's disproportionately white as opposed to black players, well, that means every person on that team is a racist, and you, as an anti-racist, have to end that. What you're being asked to do, or would be asked to do, is get on the warpath. Oh, there I used a word that's inappropriate. To get active in fighting any kind of disparity in results, not just opportunity, but results. You have to be really careful about that philosophy. Read some articles by, say, Ben Shapiro or, who else has written about this, Shelby Steele. There's quite a few out there. Read my article because I've cited several on my website. I looked into this. People will help you to recognize there's more to the critical race theory mandates to be anti-racist, more than you may realize, and that may give you pause. But I certainly applaud your intent here. I know you're trying to do the right thing. We all have to be very careful, though, not to go way overboard to something that's very harmful.
Thank you, Judith. Witt is calling next from Ashtabula, Ohio. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about the gender identity and selective service registration.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? If my understanding, you know, if you're 18 and male, you have to register?
Yes.
Okay, if you change to female, do you deregister?
That's a good question. The answer is probably yes under this administration. Even though the person claiming to be a male, if that's a biological female, then that person is not required to sign up for selective service. They certainly, women are...
isn't that discriminatory?
Military. Pardon?
Isn't that discriminatory in itself?
Well, again, it's a psychological condition that we're talking about here. Gender dysphoria is one of many psychological conditions that do affect deployability and readiness to serve. If you're not there because you're getting hormone treatments or real-life experience 3 to 12 months off, that affects everyone else if you're not there. That's an interesting question, but I think it's probably going to end up in the next handbook. Well, what do you do about this, and what do you do about that?
Right, right. Thank you, Whit, here for the call. We are just seconds from the break, so we'll pick up our next calls right after the minute break coming up here. Elaine Donnelly is with us. Folks, read her article, cmrlink.org. That's cmrlink.org. You'll find it near the top of the page there. Biden presidency begins with injuries and insults to the troops. She gets into the very issues that we're talking about here today on the interview and puts more flesh on it as well. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Recently, I had in my TV studio and on my radio show an attorney from Michigan, Matt DiPerno. Matt is the only attorney in the United States of America to get a court order to do a forensic audit of Dominion voting machines. He reported to us that after having a forensic audit done by experts, they found many problems with the Dominion machines, including, he reported, a 68% failure rate. He also said that when they went in there to look at the machines, the logs, like the system files, the adjudication files, the log files, they were gone. We also find, he says, that even blank ballots that are shoved through the machine are counted as a vote, and then they're sent to what's called adjudication, where someone or a group of people decide who they think you meant to vote for. We have a serious problem with our voting system in America, and the American people must demand free and fair elections to be a free and fair country.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We're going right back to the phone lines with Elaine Donnelly as our guest today. Let's go to Salina, Kansas. We have Chance calling in. Hi, Chance. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Just wanted to make two comments here. One was about the soldiers. Just because we're inclusive does not mean that we're strong. I mean, it seems like their progressive policy seems to be more regressive. You know, what we need is more discipline with our troops, not more lax or lack of, you know. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a friend that used to be in the Army, and he was complaining about how their new system of having a stress card to hold up, you know, when the drill sergeant is trying to, you know, basically better them for, you know, survival out there. What we need to do is, you know, have more discipline there instead of just having, I mean, we're not strong in numbers, we're strong in quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, and another thing, too, is our
environment.
Mm-hmm.
Our environment as well. The Lord promised that he would destroy this world and the universe in Revelations, I believe. We're not the ones who are going to destroy it. It's him that will ultimately.
Right. So. Thank you, Chance, for that. And, yeah, he brought up that point there about inclusivity does not equal strength.
Yes. The theory now is diversity is a strength. Diversity and inclusion make our military stronger. Well, there's really no evidence of that. We have adversaries, China, Iran, Iraq, whatever, North Korea. They don't go down that route. They're going to have the strongest military they can, and they don't care about diversity and inclusion. What does make our military stronger are the policies I mentioned before that came in with President Harry Truman. Non-discrimination, and that certainly holds for women. Women are promoted at rates equal to or faster than men. It's been that way for decades. Non-discrimination and recognition of individual merit. Now, gender diversity metrics, any kind of diversity metrics, it's not the same thing. That means quotas, it means percentages, things measured in percentages. That is not the way we should go. We should go with the policies of Harry Truman.
Let's go to Bill in Sarasota. You're on the air, Bill.
Good afternoon, Jim. Well, I think we should be holding up President Biden up in prayer, because I suspect that he should see a gastroenterologist because he's...
We don't need to go there, Bill, with that comment, but indeed, I will agree with the point that you made that we do need to be praying for those in authority over us. It doesn't matter if they have an R or D behind their name, but Scripture commands us to do that. Rhonda in Pensacola, Florida, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a friend that has a white friend who has black children.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about racism a while back, and she says, because when you hear about racism, you always think white against black. But she told me, she said, you just can't even imagine the racism that goes black toward white or any other color.
Mm-hmm.
And in her family, or in my family, cousins that married Mexican, Puerto Rican, and their family, they were like, wow, I bet your family was really racist being from the South. And I said, no, actually not. Yeah. They were not racist at all. It was you, which was his own family. So
Randy,
they just always automatically think that.
Thank you, Randy. You raised a good point. I mean, does racism work both ways, Elaine?
Racism has been part of our history. We know that, and there have been some very sad chapters in that history. That's why it's disturbing that among their first acts, the first day, President Biden eliminated the 1776 project program that President Trump instigated, that tells the history of our nation with regard to race and what we did to eliminate racism to the best of our ability as a nation. The 1776 Project was purged from the White House, from the webpage. It's been picked up by the Heritage Foundation. You can read it there. And I hope the people will, because history is just too important to just wipe out. We're not a perfect nation. Nobody claims that we are, but we're the best nation in the world. And if you allow people to tear down the history of the United States and raise children to believe that, number one, we're not going to have a military, because it takes patriotism to find people who are willing to serve. We need patriots. And if we destroy patriotism in the schools, then what do we do to defend this country?
Rhonda, thank you for the call. West Dallas, Brad, you're on the air.
Hi, Brother Jim. I just want to address the thing about the percentages that you mentioned before, or one of you mentioned before. If anything's out of percent, out of whack percentage-wise, then it's racist. Well, by that way of thinking, the National Basketball Association, which has, what was it, 90% black population, is racist, because blacks only make up 13% of our national population.
That's right.
Now, obviously that's stupid, because it's based on effort and talent, which is part of capitalism, by the way. But what we need to do is get off the skin tone and get off the race, because we're only one race, and get to what God said. Of one blood, he made all nations.
Brad, thank you for raising that issue.
Thank you, Brad.
Very good point there. Let's squeeze one last call in, and this is Pat in Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is about, you know, battle buddies. When you are under fire from the enemy, you count on your battle buddies to protect you, to cover you. And if you are killed, you count on your battle buddies to hopefully bring your body back to base, to come back to the States. So if our battle buddies think we're racist, how is that going to support a mission under fire?
Yeah, good point.
It doesn't, Pat, and that's a very good point. And it's just an example of where the trust that is needed in a combat situation, it is eroded, and it's done deliberately by these advocates of critical race theory who are not from the military world, who don't know what they're talking about, and yet we see military leaders going along with this, and political leaders like the President of the United States right now. This is going to be a challenge. President Trump, I think, instinctively realized this was the wrong way to go. He stands for non-discrimination, recognition of individual merit, and certainly military necessity. The battle buddy concept that you mentioned, it's a sound one. And if you start playing around with that and driving wedges between people, then you weaken the military and you put people at greater risk.
Thank you for the call. We are out of time. Elaine Donnelly, our guest here today. The website is cmrlink.org, cmrlink.org. You'll find the story on this topic and many other issues there. Elaine, thank you for carving out significant time to join our listeners today.
Thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. And again, folks, the website is cmrlink.org. And Elaine, just stay on the line here for a moment, if you would. But many, many issues, folks. But as callers pointed out, too, the necessity of praying for the leaders in our land. Thanks so much for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.